And welcome to Check It Out Comrade, an indie game podcast where every 2 weeks we bring you two indie games and tell you what we like about them. I'm Nick Lauber.
And I'm Gary Butterfield.
And this week we're doing Sunless Sea and The Last Door Season 1.
Yeah, this is our thematic kind of Lovecraft episode of, like, you know, many. I hear you guys out there. We're going to do Darkest Dungeon at some point, which is also Lovecrafty as shit. And, like, such a big influence, it's going to be everywhere. But these are the ones we played now.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So, Nick, and we're going to do, as per usual, we're going to have a spoiler section on The Last Door.
Yeah.
And so if you haven't played that yet, you'll have a chance to duck out.
Yeah.
Before it gets there. But so first we're going to talk about Sunless Sea. Nick, tell me what's cool about Sunless Sea.
Okay. So Sunless Sea, man, so it's a real cool setting, in this game. And it's just super atmosphere game. Like, it's heavily text based. Kind of the game mechanics I think might actually kind of fall short a little bit on me, but the setting and atmosphere are just, like, so super solid and really good that I keep playing it and just, like, losing the game over and over again just to see more of, like, the individual kind of islands and ports you can explore.
It's really hard to explain exactly what it is.
Yeah.
It's kind of like FTL with a choose your own adventure, kind of like text-based thing. Like, you make these choices, but they're tied to stats. You know, so it's like a game book mixed with an FTL a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But it does get a lot of mileage out of that setting, which is just super evocative and great.
Yeah.
You know, really, really awesome, like, bleak atmosphere and everything. And, like, for me, like, and I haven't played as much of it, I'm in the middle of a move, but the mechanics, which are not super deep, like, they're there enough to make me want to get more of the writing, which is really top notch.
Yeah.
You know, which is actually going to be a little bit of a theme this episode, I think. You know,
So, for those who aren't familiar, Sunless Sea is a game by Failbetter Games, who is really only other game they're known for is this browser game called Fallen London, who actually our good friend Brayton Cameron is super into right now. So,
mm-hmm. And it takes place in the same universe.
Yeah, it's the same universe. So, essentially, the setting, which is kind of the whole pool for both games, is kind of this Victorian English setting, except that there's a London that's beneath the core of the earth, where there's this huge dark sea. Everyone lives in, like, you know, all complete darkness. Only artificial light exists. And there's, you know, Lovecraftian horrors and all sorts of, like, neat like, races and creatures that have evolved to fit this unique setting.
Mm-hmm. And it's played as a real matter-of-fact kind of way. Like, this is just how things are now, and there's no exposition dump.
Right.
Like, you get two sentences that say this is the state of the world, and then you're just free to explore it and get all of the detail about what the world is like through finding these colonies and everything.
Yeah.
And it's just, like, some of the stuff is just really phenomenal. Like, the you know, the dead colonies, like, the thing where, like, if people, you know, head off to die, they go to this specific place, and, you know, you can go there and have an audience with the guy who runs it.
Mm-hmm.
And the description of him is great.
Yeah.
Like, it's just this weird, like, ragged thing that's, like, the size of a child sitting on a couch that, you know, like is scared of moths and uses luminescent bees, and, like, just these, like, amazing, like, throwaway details that suggest a really, really interesting fiction.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like games oftentimes will get up their ass with, like, a game Bible. Like, that's, like, the BioWare thing where, you know, there's 20, you know, books worth of text on the background of the Dragon Age universe, and not one bit of it is interesting on its own.
Right.
You know, like, oh, I get to read a codex about the founding of the Chantry. Great. You know, and it's not interesting at all, because it's all exposition.
Right.
This, like, reminds me a little bit of the way that they tell stories in Dark Souls, where, like, they give you the answers and you have to come up with the questions.
Right.
Rather than vice versa.
Like, this is, you know, this is the best example, but this is, like, The Hobbit to the rest of the Silmarillion and all the other bullshit J.R.R. Tolkien wrote. Like, you just get the good parts and you're just dropped in the universe. You don't give a shit about all those crazy details and stuff that are irrelevant.
Yeah, it does a really good job of, like, and something that it's interesting to pair this with the next game we're talking about, where this one via text draws, you know, a shape in the darkness and doesn't tell you what it is, whereas the next one does that via graphics.
Mm-hmm.
And they're both really, really good at it. Like, they don't spell it out explicitly, so you are left to, like, to be unnerved, you know, by these little details, and creeped out without actually knowing exactly what they are. So it's really cool in that respect.
There are some parts of this game too that where they actually did put out the visual sort of horrors in. Like, I discovered at one point, one thing to note about this game is that the map is randomly shuffled every time. The same locations exist on the map, but there's a lot of map to explore. So each new game you play, unless you've specifically set up yourself to have the same map, which is something I'll talk about in a bit, but the map is shuffled. So what might be on, like, the far right on my map might have been somewhere completely different on yours. But I was exploring around and found just, like, I was sailing through this huge, like, rib cage, and there's, like, it's unlabeled. For this game where, like, every little bit you see is, like, this is a place and these are the people you can talk to there. All of a sudden, like, I'm just in dark, empty sea, and I suddenly am sailing through this big rib cage that's, like, unnamed and shit. I was like, whoa, what the fuck is this?
Yeah, yeah, because the way the gameplay takes place is kind of like you're viewing a map.
Yeah.
You know, and that's part of the thing. Like, it's so hard to categorize this game because it has roguelike elements. It has these, like, choose your own adventure elements. And then it also has these, like, exploration survival elements. And I think that the way that they interact is really interesting. Have you played? I'm really interested now that I played this to actually join Brayton and check out Fallen London. Have you done that at all?
I haven't played any of it yet. I'm interested to see it too. Like, obviously it's the same writer, so the writing's gonna be top notch, which is kind of what, like, stopped me from wanting to really dig into it. It's like, oh, this is all just a text-based browser game, and I'm sure there's, like, all this junk I don't want to get into. But if it's all, like, this cool universe that this game has brought me into, and, you know, the same level of writing, then I probably would actually quite enjoy it.
Yeah, yeah, they do a good job. Do a good job with the shit. And, like, the way that they handle, like, it's kind of weird. Like, everything is a stat or an inventory thing, like, down to, like, news and information.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it commodifies information in a way that I haven't seen.
Yeah.
In a game that deals with, like, exploration, like, the closest I've seen to that is the old computer game about exploration that I talked about recently on Watch Our Fireballs called Starflight. And Starflight, one of the things you're doing is finding hospitable planets.
Mm-hmm.
And so once you find one, you can recommend it as, like, and tell people about it and get money for that.
Right.
And that just doesn't happen a lot in games, which I think is cool too. Like, it's exploration that you have a mechanical and material advantage for doing.
The other thing that this reminded me of, in a kind of similar fashion, especially how you're, like, jumping from island to island and kind of getting, you know, your main source of income at the start is to get reports from all these different islands and bring them back to London. And so you're just meeting a whole bunch of different odd races and stuff. And I was reminded a lot of Star Control 2.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, because that's a lot of what I got out of this game was, like, same thing I got out of Star Control is I was just exploring all these planets. I get to meet, like, these cool creatures, and they might want me to go here and talk to this other race to get this done and whatnot. So there's, like, interactions between what you're doing in Star Control is a lot of what's going on in Sun of the Sea too. Like, this island wants, you know, this resource or this piece of information, and you go spy on this other island of unique beings.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like weirdo characters.
Yeah.
And stuff that are all, like, and it is one of the things that I appreciate about this and the next game they're doing is that they're hopelessly bleak, because that's a thing I like.
Yeah.
And it is even down to the descriptions. Like, one of the early islands I found, three sisters live there, and each of them, they, you know, I could lunch with any of them because I brought them fresh news to their island.
Right.
And they, it was just like, this person, you know, is fidgety and can't, like, stare at the same place, you know, never blinks.
Mm-hmm.
And this person is melancholic and, you know, a drunk. And this person is just, like, nobody's good.
Yeah.
You know, and, like, down to, like, the crew you can hire.
Yeah.
Like, nobody is good. Like, nobody gets off well in this world. And it just feels like it's a really, like, unified aesthetic that I really dig.
You get to, like, hire on crew members that actually take up certain roles that'll help you, like, generate these stats for you. So, like, if you have a armor or something, he helps your iron, which will help you do more damage in battle. but you only start with one, and I'm pretty sure it's always the same one, and it's a comatose rat.
Oh yeah, yeah. Well, I had a comatose. I had a ferret.
Oh okay.
Yeah. So I think it is different. And then eventually, one of the first people I got was a cook.
Yeah, yeah.
So the and the thing with the stats, this really made me want a tabletop universe for this.
Yeah.
Like you know, the stats are really evocatively named, and they sound like tabletop stats, like your, you know, like your mirror skill and your iron skill and stuff like that. Like a real minimalist story based Lovecraftian tabletop RPG in this universe. Like,
yeah, it'd be really cool.
They got to do it. Like
they should definitely.
It's good. Like where like these different islands, like it would lend itself so well to it, because any, you know, you pretty much would have unlimited as the game master to like make these islands, and then just have people, and they're just, you know, the goal of the game is to explore. Mm-hmm. So you have a reason for the players to go out. The players go out, they're a crew on a ship, they have a reason to be together, and then you can put whatever you want on these islands. Like that was like, it made me want to hack it. Like I want to like yeah. Fate and do like a Son of the Sea hack after, if I get like real deep into the fiction.
Yeah. It is pretty cool. And it is great that they like, starting with this like blank slate of, okay, what would live under in this underwater, or like this, this sea that's under the earth of London. There's some really cool islands that I managed to come across that I was like, real interested in. There's one called the Utter Shroom that is literally, the island is a gigantic fungus, and it's inhabited by like sentient fungus who wants you to go spread them. They give you like their spores, and they want you to go, like, if you have a good, I think, mirror stat or something, then you can like, as you're visiting other ports, kind of just like secretly plant their spores elsewhere.
That's crazy. And if that pays off like down the road, that's so cool.
It's really neat.
That is really good. So yeah, I dig it a lot. Like I want to spend more time with it, and I wish that I had more time to spend with it this week.
Yeah.
I'm planning on playing it a lot more.
One thing that I wanted to note too is that, like, because it's all about this exploration and knowing where the different locations are at give you a huge boon. There's an in-game element that allows you to keep your map to the next one, and what you have to do is upgrade your living situation in London and then pay to write a will and then retire. And when you retire, you can choose one of like five things to pass on to your descendant. It's still like the game, all the quests and stuff get reset, which is kind of, you know, it doesn't kind of make sense storyline wise at all, but like everything's kind of reset to base level. But if you choose the map one, then everything remains in the same area, and all of your fog of war that you explored is still there. So it's like, I ended my run for Comrade on like retiring, starting a new game with the map fully exposed, and being like, cool, now I'm in a much better starting situation than I was last time, and I can get further on it.
Yeah, it has that iterative Rogue Legacy.
Yeah.
The feel where like you pass on something to your descendants who are going through, and that's how you make progress. Mm-hmm. Like even though things are randomized, like you can pass on some stats that you've gained or money or knowledge to your descendants, which is, you know, super, super valuable.
Especially in how hard it is and how easy it is to starve or run out of fuel and be dead in the water.
Yeah, it's a really hard game.
Yeah.
Too. Like, that's the thing, too. And, like, it is, yeah. So, that is all. It makes me, like, I really wish that there was a tablet version, too, because I would play it a bunch before bed.
That'd be pretty cool. It's well, I don't, it might be a little too, it's really slow paced, but.
Yeah. Yeah, that's my thing. Is like I didn't upgrade my ship very much, so I never got to like where my ship could zip around.
Yeah.
And the pace I think works for the horror.
It does.
Element of it, like going really slow and just kind of poking into the darkness. Like one of the things when you upgrade your ship, you have all the standard upgrades like guns and engine, but one of the big things you can upgrade is your light. You know, how far you can see and how much it cuts through the fog and stuff.
Yep.
Which is super cool.
It is a good game. It is a good horror-themed game that isn't like a horror game in the least.
Yeah, yeah, I dig it. Like I'm really interested to play some more, and so good on you. That came out pretty recently too.
Yeah.
So this month. Get in on the ground floor. It is still is it still early access?
No, I think that's what the release was. Was it coming out of early access? Maybe I'm not entirely sure, but they are still updating it. And there's still some like major things. Maybe it's not quite out of early access yet, but they're nearing that point.
Yeah, it's under construction, but it is, you know, viable.
Yeah, it's
so good. don't feel bad about jumping on board.
All right. So with that, let's move on to the last door. Which is like we're like I said, we're doing Last Door Season 1 because this is an episodic point and click adventure game that can be played for free at thelastdoor.com. It's all in browser, or you can get it on Steam or on mobile with the Last Door Collector's Edition.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, Gary, tell me what you like about The Last Door.
The Last Door is a really good example of something that I like that horror games do, and we talked about it when we did In the Kingdom, is using low fidelity graphics to add to the spookies.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a master class in that. Like it is super like, you know, VGA graphics. Like it looks like an old King's Quest game.
Yep.
But they use that to really good effect. Like they use that combination of sound design and also just kind of visual design as well to make things that have almost no fidelity be really scary.
Yeah.
Like it is. I find this game legitimately like pretty spooky.
It's haunting for sure.
Yeah. Like it, you know, there's a lot of unnerving stuff. It has some jump scares, but they're done sparingly, and it's not like a Five Nights at Freddy's thing where it's like constantly.
No.
It's like there's one or two of them per episode,
if that.
And if that, and they're all really good. Like they all feel really earned.
Yeah, I agree.
And it also just it's got me really engaged in the story.
The story's great.
Yeah, it's super cool. Like it starts off like I'm like, okay, this is going to be about a guy exploring, you know, and kind of finding these logs. And then when you get to the second episode of it and you start interacting with NPCs more, it feels like it would have been really easy to have it be, you get all the story after the fact. But the fact that you end up being around people and they're acting strange and then that continues into the later episode as well, does a really good job of giving it this feel of like, you know, like this Innsmouth feel, like mm-hmm. these people keeping a secret from me and I am the outsider, like I'm the intruder here.
Yeah, you're right in the heat of things, and like you are kind of on the trail of something as the episodes go on, but you're getting more and more into the thick of it as the episodes go in. Mm-hmm. It's super solid, and actually like playing it, I was like, this is probably the truest to what I like have experienced of Lovecraft works, and especially playing, you know, your Lovecraft games, tabletop games. I was like, this is exactly the sort of like story I want Lovecraft's involved stuff to be.
They do a great job with that. Like it's not directly, you know, it has no direct mythos.
Right. Yeah. It's not directly related to any of it.
It's its own thing, but it is, you know, it pays a lot of homage to that.
It is all of the feel, like every bit of it.
Yep. Down to the fact that like, I mean, you know, you're a guy in Victorian England and you know, you're not, there's no combat. You know, you are just solving puzzles and trying to stay sane. There's no sanity mechanic, but there is, you get to see through the narrative, the toll that this investigation takes on your character.
Mm-hmm.
And they do a lot of really interesting things with breaking, or doing different POV things. Like it's really cleverly put out. Like the fact that you spend portion, like each one has a really affecting prologue.
Yeah.
Section that you play that like is usually foreshadowing or from another perspective. There are these interstitial episodes that deal with kind of side people in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Getting out of your protagonist's head really lets you see, you know, the kind of skewed perspective you're gaining through being exposed to this stuff. It just does a really, really good job of that.
It's so good.
Yeah, it's really, and the puzzles are really like, it does puzzles in an adventure game too, because like this is something I've been thinking about a lot lately is traditional adventure games and like versus kind of the Telltale model, because Bob Mackey, our buddy, wrote a thing kind of bemoaning the lack of puzzles in adventure games lately.
Uh-huh.
And I kind of realized, like, as much as I like adventure games, oftentimes the puzzle parts did feel like they broke the flow.
Yeah,
a little bit. Here, the puzzles, like the same way that jump scares are usually sparingly, like each, you know, each episode has like five puzzles, and the way you solve all of them is through exploration, which is what you're doing anyway.
Yeah,
like nothing feels really counterintuitive. There's no like guess what the dev was thinking,
right,
style puzzles. It just does a really good job of like making, they don't break the flow. Like you still feel like you're just doing this lonely, you know, exploration to solve these puzzles, and it it's what you'd be doing anyway, even if it was just purely a narrative game.
Yeah, I haven't had to look up anything for any of the puzzles. There's been a couple where I got stuck for a few minutes and was like, where do I need to be with this item? And did a little bit of the King's Quest style, like, click this item onto this item and that, like, just a little bit. And I think it was only in one episode that I felt that really badly. All the rest have been, like, especially the last two episodes, I think, were, like, just crazy smooth.
Yeah.
Puzzles were integrated perfectly.
They do a really good job of making them not ruin the pacing of what you're doing. And the actual puzzles themselves, like, all also have, like, really real world kind of solutions too. Like, you don't end up doing a lot of the, like, the example we used to Watch Out Fireballs when we did the longest journey was like this thing about creating this weird fishing pole out of an air tube to pull something out of the sewer and stuff. Like, you're not using items in ways they're not meant to be used.
Right.
For the most part. So, like, if you see something, you know, it'll work. And the game gives you good feedback. Like, if you're trying to cut through a painting and you have a rock and try to use it, it doesn't just say, like, that doesn't work or give you a noise. It's like, this actually isn't sharp enough.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or it, like, gives you a reason why. And that points you towards, oh, I need to get something sharper than that.
I think one of my favorites was, it was one of the last two episodes where there's an obvious photo development room, like all the chemicals and all everything in there, and a shattered red light bulb, or no, it's a like frame around a light bulb that was red. So now the light bulb's just like glowing yellow and there's just red shatters on the ground. But you can go up to the lamp and take the light bulb out and go find like a carcass and dip the light bulb in blood and go put that back in there to make the red have or make the room have a red light so that you can develop a picture in there. It's so good. Like, yeah, that's
super
perfect.
Super spooky. And that kind of stuff happens more like your character is shocked and appalled by doing things like that early on and then gets less so as the game goes on. I also love I love an episodic game like this where it's done and it's like, okay, like there's one of the things I really liked about Telltale games too, is that, okay, I have like an hour free and I want like a whole experience. Mm-hmm. You can just sit down and play. And like, and this doesn't take that long to beat. Like, it is not as long as a Telltale season.
Right.
But you know, like playing the, all four episodes, you know, it's a few, you know, couple hours.
Yeah. It's maybe, you know, 30 minutes to an hour per episode.
Yeah. And so you can just sit down and be like, I just want a chunk of like horror adventure gaming for that long. And then each one ends on like a real kind of cliff, not specifically a cliffhanger, but like a way that leaves you wanting more.
Right.
And I haven't dipped into the second season because of that. Like, I want the second season
to be in full.
And then I'll jump into it. And I hope they just do three seasons. Like, I don't think this is like a serial thing they could just do forever.
Right.
I'd be interested to see what the company does. Moving on, the Game Kitchen is the name of the company. Who I think are all actually, I think they're all Spanish.
Yes.
Spanish, which right. is cool. Yeah, I think it's from Spain. I could be wrong about that, but I believe so.
I'm pretty sure you're right. Yeah. And yes, in fact, on the Kickstarter, it says they're in Seville, Spain. And on top of that, when you first start an episode each time on the website, the two official translations are always Spanish and English, and then everything else is a fan translation below, which it's in like a bajillion languages too. So if you understand my words but prefer a different language, you can play this game in so many of them. So
So it just the way they do that kind of like, I love that episodic nature. I want to see what this company does after they do this story. I just want this story to have an end because good stories have an end.
Yes.
That's really I was heading towards that. I thought I had a bigger point, but I lost it.
No, that's a perfectly valid point. No, I really want this to end because it's...
Oh, and I'm sorry. I was going to talk about the funding model, which is like the way they're kind of like raising money through it for it. But they're raising money for like each episode, which like at first I was a little bit like, you know, these are short experiences and they are really low fidelity. But then I was like, no, they're doing really good work and I want them to get paid for each episode they make.
Yeah.
So it doesn't bother me. And they're also releasing them free, like whatever, after the most recent one, they're free. So it's like after they've made their money up front, they're not like, you know, charging in order to charge again.
Right. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, so it's a free game that they want you to fund to get some extras. And also I believe you know, the special editions too are also like, you know, helping back up the future episodes. So
yeah, and the special edition is reasonably priced anyway. Like, it's $10 for all four episodes, all the interstitial stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, you know, is worth it. I didn't realize the game was actually free until I had already bought it, but I'm glad I did. Because I want to give these guys money, and it's really good.
I think they said there's some upgraded like lighting and sound in the special editions as well. So
yeah, I definitely believe that. So crazy positive response on the Steam too.
Oh, it's people worth love this it. Game. Yeah, like it deserves it by far.
Yep.
I'm a big fan. All right, so we're gonna do a little ending stuff real quick, but we're gonna come back and talk a little bit about the actual story of The Last Door, which we didn't want to get into. Because what you want you guys to play it. But if you want to hear some of our opinions on how the story's going so far, then catch us after all this stuff. There'll be a little ditty. But first, some admin stuff.
Yeah. So if you want to help out the show, you can rate or review the show on iTunes. It's a big deal. Mm-hmm. And if you don't have iTunes or don't want to do that or already have, tell your friends about it.
Yeah. And we have a couple social outlets where you can come hang out with us. We have a Facebook page. At facebook.com/checkitoutcomrade. We're also on Twitter at Comrade Podcast. Mm-hmm. And you can give suggestions and talk to us about our latest episodes out there. You can find us on duckfeed.tv/contact and submit a message there for any games you might want to see us do or any sort of positive or negative feedback.
Yeah, we're interested in your feedback. Yeah, I think that's probably about it.
Yeah.
After a short musical interlude, we'll be talking about some spoilers for The Last Door.
Yeah.
It wasn't before I met you, but you weren't with me. Mm-hmm. And this is only tangentially related. About 3 or 4 years ago, when I was doing the haunted house circuit in Portland, there was one that was touring called the 13th Door. And they had billboards everywhere. And all of them were like, what's behind the 13th door? And I was like, I have to do it. Like, there's,
you know, what's behind that damn door?
I needed to see what was behind the door. And it wasn't, it was a kind of good haunted house. It wasn't like amazing or anything.
Right.
But just whenever you say like, you know, the last door, like that's such a good sentence. Cause you know, I just want to know what's behind that door. And it could just be like the bathroom and they should stop ending the tour with it. But like,
listen, we know you've had a good time. You bited to go use the restroom. Here's finally the 13th door for you.
Exactly. But it's a pay toilet.
Yeah. So Gary.
Yeah.
What do you think of the story so far? How are you liking it?
I love that they burn the main character down in flames in the first season. Like I hinted at a little bit in the first part of it, but I love that the second season is going to be about either other people touched by this past, this like bird deity,
mm-hmm.
and they're talking about, or people investigating the death of the first character.
Yeah.
Because we as the player will know things that the characters in the second season don't know.
Yeah.
About what he's uncovered. And that creates this awesome dramatic irony. Yeah.
I haven't looked at it, but it seemed like in the last episode they were setting it up to be about the psychiatrist. Mm-hmm. And his other psychiatrist buddy who knows a little bit more about Eldritch Horrors than he does.
I thought that too, but then the first episode of the second season is called The Playwright.
Oh.
Which makes me think that it's possible that those psychiatrist guys are gonna be kind of side characters for the whole thing.
That'd be cool.
Investigating different people. The fact that it's called The Playwright makes a lot of sense because out of all the Lovecraft stuff, like it does a lot of King and Yellow stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's a lot of you know, play that makes you go crazy. And right. Mask stuff, which is my favorite, you know, corner of Lovecraft mythos.
They're touching on a little bit of multiple things there. Like the play stuff, instead of being like, besides the one episode where you have the ticket and like you're going, you're trying to find a quote unquote play. But it seems that the actual thing that they're doing is a drug, and the play is kind of just a synonym for what they're expressing, seeing beyond this veil, is like seeing out into this other dimensions, is like looking behind the curtain.
Yeah. It plays with the iconography of like the King in Yellow without actually doing it. Like
yeah.
It has a little bit of that, like, I know what you did last summer feel to it. Like we're like these kids who, you know, done fucked up and you know, they have this thing in common and they're bound by it. And what the thing, it's like essentially like, what if boarding school students like accidentally, you know, opened up a riff
right.
in the universe and spotted these elder gods, and the elder gods spotted them as well.
Mm-hmm.
And what kind of impacts that's having on their lives and on the world, which is just, you know, just speaks to me.
It's so good.
the play scene, the end of that episode 3 is so good.
Yeah.
I've got like that as my desktop right now, is like him, you know, the guy in the yellow robes with the guy behind him or in the chair with all the people in the masks in the background.
Yeah, that's good.
It unseated the dancing skeletons that I had as my desktop for like 2 years. I was just like, yep, there we go. Need that's that.
Good. It is super good. And man, they are definitely playing super well with this low pixel art to make it happen. And the animation, like, they're not bad pixel artists at all.
It's no, they're, super good they're really artists. Good. It's just like super low. They're big pixels.
Yeah.
So like everything is animated really well, and you always know what things are. And them having the big pixels has a, I could have talked about this in the main part of the episode, but has a mechanical benefit of you not really doing pixel hunting.
Right. Because like, when there's only 100 of them to see at a time.
Exactly. Well, and it means that every object that you can interact with has to be presented in a way that you can tell what it is.
Right.
In like a, you know, 9x9 grid.
Mm-hmm.
Which means that you're not going to be like, there aren't things that like blend into the background really.
Right.
They do a really good job of that. I'm just way, way into. Like, this came along this weird, I had this weird bug up my butt, and I'm just like looking through tags on Steam and looking through Lovecraft games, and like all of them are all just like monsters jumping out at shit, and they all, you know, and that tag looks like garbage. And then just saw it, they had really good reviews, and decided to take a chance on it. And like, I'm kind of amazed I didn't know about this.
Yeah.
Like, why did nobody tell me about this? Yeah, why was I not informed?
I literally heard about it from you telling Cole on Facebook how much he needed to play this.
Yeah, Cole's got to play this shit. Like, he's a big horror guy and big adventure game fan.
Yeah.
And this is right up.
It is
right up
top his alley. It's crazy too. The Kickstarter only they're only asking for like just under 4,000, and they only made like just over 4,500, or that's euros, I guess. So it's a little bit more than what I'm saying, but it's not
outrageous.
Yeah, it's still under 10K, you know, for this entire thing to get funded, and it's just top notch.
Man, I love Kickstarter moderation stories. Like, we just did our live stream, and somebody asked us a question about like Kickstarter as a game development platform, and it is like a double-edged sword. Like, you can see where it, like, obviously in the news of this Peter Molyneux stuff, and we've bitched about Double Fine before.
Mm-hmm.
But if you are able to stay modest, like, you can just do amazing things with not that much money and really keep your promises and like over deliver.
Yeah.
You know, like the, like, I can't imagine anyone being disappointed in this who paid money for it.
Oh yeah, absolutely not. Yeah. I've had a couple of those too that have just been like little things from people who are really good at art or something. And I was like, this game looks gorgeous, and I'll totally give you $10, and you can take however long you want to make whatever game you want. And mm-hmm. It's worked out for me. Like, I've been following this game, Radio the Universe, for a while. It's mm-hmm. still not out. I think it was funded like a year and a half ago, maybe even longer. But he keeps releasing videos, and each one is fucking prettier than the last. And this is one of like the best looking pixel artist guys I've ever seen. Like, his game just looks gorgeous. It might play like trash. I will wander through his universe for fucking however long, because it's just so good looking.
Did you, as far as like individual Last Door stuff, not to bring us too hard back on it, but like very first jump scare in the game, the room with the ravens.
Yeah.
That's so good.
It's so good.
Like, that's so good. Did you notice also, I think it is in the fourth, it might be in the fourth episode, with the record of the man laughing.
Uh-huh. If you stop it and start it again, he's crying.
Yeah. That is so good.
Like, that is amazing.
Yeah. Like, that is just really, really perfect. Yeah. It's just 1,000 little touches in this. And it's such a triumph of moderation. Like, it is not, you know, it takes as long as it needs to tell the story and doesn't go any further. Like, it leaves you wanting more, which is what I wish games would do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's really, really good.
Yeah, it's kind of the perfect like classic style point and click. It might be the best Sierra style point and click game I've played in
a very long time.
A very long time.
And as far as like just like batting average, like, there are probably games that go, you know, do higher highs, but as far as just like consistency,
mm-hmm.
this is just really top of the pops, and there's no risk for people to check it out. Like, I've been pushing it to people I talk to, just because it's like, this literally will cost you nothing.
Yep.
Other than 2 hours, which is, you know, 2 or 3 hours, which is again inconsequential.
Or you could even play just the first episode to get a complete experience in that, and if you like it, there's so much more for you to play now.
Yeah, there's a lot more to do. So I really want them to finish. Worst case scenario is that interest dries up and they never complete whatever the story is.
Mm-hmm.
That would suck, because I have a lot of faith in them going somewhere with it.
Yeah. Hopefully this brings some other people around.
Yeah, play it.
Please do.
Yep.
All right. I think that'll do it. Thanks for listening, guys.
Yeah, and take care.
Yep. Bye.